Welcome everyone to Know Their Brand podcast, a podcast designed to champion and support gender inclusion in business. Welcome everyone. I'm Giulia, your host, a social entrepreneur dedicated to helping women in business. Join me and my fantastic guest to find out more about gender inclusion and to be inspired by their incredible stories. Hello, everyone. Today, we have with us Georges Bock. Georges is the CEO and founder of Investre. Hi, Georges.
Hi, Julia. How are you?
Good, I'm good. Thank you for joining us. So for the people of Luxembourg, I don't think I need much introduction about what you do for a living. I had the pleasure to work with you when we had the event on gender equality on the 8th of March with the Loft. But for my audience in general, can you give us a little bit of introduction about who you are, what you do for a living, and most importantly, why you are such a good advocate and ally for gender inclusion?
Okay, thank you, Julia. Yeah, who am I? I mean, Georges Bock is 50 years young. I have two kids, a daughter, which is 21, and my son is 18. Professionally wise, and a dog. The dog is very young. The dog has 1 year, is 1 year old. On a professional basis, I used to be for 28 years at KPMG, so pretty much in the traditional, rather conservative financial world. And well, I decided that I wanted still to do other stuff with my life. And that's why I decided in 2018 just to stop my career at KPMG, give it an end. During my career at KPMG, I was basically doing advisory work, but has also evolved into international functions like a global digital strategy for the group, some European functions, network organizations, which was a pretty interesting and a pretty international kind of career, I have to say, and brought me also a lot of insight on how different people are around this planet. Which was very interesting. Then I decided to make this cut, and I had the cut with no clear plan. So it was not supposed to be a cut with the next job. It was to really give me time to think. And I remember one of my big four former friends told me, "But what are you doing these days?" And I said, "Well, I want to try to find out who is Georges Bock." And that was, he could not really understand. I saw it from his eyes that but definitely that was really what I wanted to do, really to find out what I want to do next in my life. I also took an advantage to do a little bit of studies, had some on topics that were of interest. A topic that was of interest was anything that goes around blockchain technology, platform economy, this kind of stuff. So I followed some studies at MIT. And then in parallel, I got involved in some board memberships, mainly in tech-driven companies. And then finally, I decided to give myself the chance also to create a company and follow my convictions. And we can speak about that then later. and that was then Investre. On a non-profit basis, I'm a board member of UNICEF.
Didn't know that.
Yes. I'm heading an association which is managing hospital clowns, so going into elderly homes and hospitals, cheer up people, laughing is the best medicine. That is not given by doctors. Okay.
Wow, I had no clue you had all of these things on the side. That's fantastic.
And then maybe a last thing that could also be interesting for the debate at a later stage is that I'm part of the think tank of the Luxembourg government when it comes to sustainable development. So this is a multidisciplinary think tank. We get from time to time requests from the government to say, what do you think about this or that? But we can also forge thinking and say, well, we want to make a study on this or this or this, and produce papers and try to develop a kind of public thought process around topics. We are completely apolitical. We are just driven by the topic and the public society, so or civil society, I don't know what to say.
Wow. Okay. That will explain a little bit why you're so passionate about diversity and also, you know, causes that are not necessarily linked to business per business, but a bit more.
Absolutely. No, on that side, what drove me a little bit into this passion around diversity was my life experience, because I remember when I was a young professional, I had once a discussion with two ladies in the office, and while they were speaking about all these differences between men and women and how this can drive different behaviors and make different careers, I was a little bit like, no, this is not, there is nothing big about men and women. There's a thing about extrovert, introverts, creatives, non-creatives, but this has nothing to do with men and women. It's just characters. And I have to say, my very first lessons, I got them when I had my kids, because I was not consciously teaching them any kind of difference. But I realized to see that there were some, and I could not discuss them away. And they both had the same education, and they listened to the same comments on the table. But nevertheless, you could see these stereotypes coming in. And I started then to get more interested in this, and also follow up more. And as I followed up more, and I tried also to follow up in professional life, I could see this huge difference, nevertheless. Which for me now, I call them the bias in our heads. And the very first and most important thing is recognize that you have a bias, try to understand your bias, and to bring it into your equation when you deal with situations. Because I do not want that men would think the same way than women and women the same way than men, because then diversity makes no sense again. the rich kind of element of the exercise would get lost. But I think it's more important to understand where you are and then bring it in your decision process. And maybe also an experience that I shared, which is also a personal one, and I have also some professional one, but one is a personal one, is an experience that I had when my daughter had to be part of a project, and she was doing a project just with two more boys. And she said, by coincidence, we had a chit chat and said, she told me, I'm very excited. I'm going to go to this afternoon, we're going to make our first project and with boys and blah, blah. Okay, I said, interesting. And then when she came back in the evening and we were at dinner, I said, so Hannah, how did it go? And she said, Daddy, what do you want to know? I said, I just want to know, did the boys ask you what were you doing? And did the boy ask for your input? And then she said, she was already a little bit in the stereotype again, said, I did the typing. And then I would say, okay. And then she said, yeah, from time to time, the boys were asking, Hannah, how would you sing and how would you feel? And she said, but why do you ask? And I told her, you know, the boys always pretend to know better, but in fact, they don't. Okay, and she was continuing like 30 seconds, and then she was saying, but on this, the boys pretend to know better, but they don't. So why are they doing it, this? And I told her, look, it's not about the boys being bad about it. It's just ingrained in a little bit. Don't ask me how we end up with such a situation, but be careful, or be careful in when you have them in front of you, because the other way around, the girls always are a little bit insecure about, but from time to time know better. So take your bias, don't try to change them, but they pretend to know better, but they don't. So if you speak to them and you have the feeling you don't know, you better include in your thinking that you know, and you should absolutely express yourself. And I think that is really this example on what is my bias, be conscious of it, put it in the equation when I deal with somebody.
I couldn't agree more, absolutely. Like that's the first, but the first thing is recognizing the bias. And bias, we have them boys and girls, men and women. Yes. Like it's not that it's only one way. And, you know, we have them about other people. We have them about ourselves. Definitely there is an element of boys you know, be more confident or coming across more confident. I don't even know if it's actually that you are more confident, but at least you have this ability to show confidence, and women less. But remember, we talked with Denise Voss, she was on this podcast a few episodes ago, about also the way we are raised. You know, boys can climb on the tree, can jump up and down, and girls are normally taught to be more gentle and quieter, and you help in the kitchen. You know, and that defines you from the very beginning on how you're going to interact with people. So it's good. I love you talk about the bias and recognizing them, because we're going to have them anyway. I mean, we can work on it. A lot of companies think that when they do one session on bias, then that's it. They've solved the problem of, you know, gender inclusion. It's not like this. Like, they're ingrained in our upbringing. But if we learn to be aware of them and to use them, as you say, so, okay, wait, what is clouding in my judgment here? How I'm behaving, or how are they behaving? Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, in professional situations, for example, a typical kind of exercise where I would say that you also have to bring in this thought process. I had then some situations where I had a team of 20 people and we were discussing about something to be done, and we have fixed the plan. And then I would have to ask the question, okay, who wants to present, or who wants to participate, who takes the lead? And in 90% of the cases, I just saw man hands going up. And as you know, the participants in there, you look at some ladies and you look like you might be even best placed. Why don't you raise your hand? Can you raise your hand? And of course, there is then, so that's where I say one should be then slightly careful. If I know already that that is the case, maybe before I ask the question, I should speak to the person and say, well, look, I think you might be good in encouraging a little bit, be a little bit on the soft side. Because, of course, in front of a crowd, then it also gets a little bit tricky maybe to say, but what about you? And what about, because it feels a little bit like you were pushing or maybe too much stewarding certain people. But you have to know that is going to be the case. And you're absolutely sure that some other persons, and as I said, it's, believe it or not, it's like men, women saying they would be absolutely perfect for the job, but they start to doubt on themselves. And for whatever reason, because they and I think the maybe the ingrained doubt is that the women seem to have more the 100% minus thought than the 50% plus thought. And let me explain what that means. For a job, if you would say like in this job you need five kind of qualities, and a woman would missing one, she would say, well, this is not 100, okay, because I need to have 100 because it's five criteria. Well, there's one that is missing, I cannot do it, okay?
Yeah.
And the boys are more, or men are more 50 plus. So I meet three criteria. Well, I'm perfectly fit for this job because, like, okay, nobody fits for everything. And anyhow, I know a little bit about the others and I can still learn them and I don't care. So I'm more than I'm in it. And I also, this is also something I've seen even in application processes. And I remember I had recently to coach a person to become a high ranking board of an SEC company. She felt she was not adequate because she had effectively missing, she was missing one of these elements. She did not want anymore to apply. And I said, like, look, you do what you want, but you should absolutely apply. And guess what? She got the job, and they got, she got really told that she was the best qualified. So it's this really thing on this 100% minus 50% plus, and that is also something which makes then that the boys seem to be more confident, because if they are 50 plus, they said, oh yeah, it's for me.
Yeah. But there is also another thing though, because I find in my experience the men tend to be given a job for potential. So someone sees a potential in a man and is like, okay, you can do it. With women, there is a lot of probing. Like, the woman should be already there. It's not, no, I don't want to generalize everywhere, but there is a lot of, I mean, studies, you know, I spend my time studying all the studies on the topic. And there are a lot of studies that prove that women are promoted, they need really to show that they have already all the skills for the job, which actually is counterproductive, because if you get someone that is already perfectly qualified. They don't, they won't have much to grow and to you know, to develop in the role. You want to buy to take someone on potential. It's obviously not full potential, but you know, because then they can really develop and grow and possibly grow with the team and everything. So I agree with you. We've seen it a lot of time. I talk about the experience I had with in the Eric process, but yeah.
I would also give one tip on this to ladies, and which I also, when I had the coaching discussion with that person, also others, women then tend to want to start the exercise by speaking about their or the things that are missing and say, well, I'm going to do this. I said, you're going to shut up until you are asked, okay? You're just going to speak about everything you have and how good you have it, and so on and so on. But don't even speak what you do not have. It's up to the interviewer to ask you. And when he asks you, okay, you can always say like, look, fine enough. I mean, look, what I've also already done. Yeah, that's, I'm already 30% there and the other 70, here we go, I'm going to do it. But there is also again, this about this 50 plus 100 minus, starting with the interview with what you do not know and that you can make, this is the wrong side. You just speak about your good stuff and you do not even mention what you cannot do until anyhow the other party is going to ask you. And then it's the time to take your speech, but don't even start with it.
No, that's true. And I think, again, it's all the way we've been raised. We have to be graceful. We have to be honest. We have to be like, you know, and I think it's very important that we find our own voice. Like that, you know, I work a lot on personal branding for women. And that's because you find your own voice to communicate your value, not what you don't have, but to communicate what you have to give.
No. Exactly right. And one sees it so often. And so it's important elements. It's just a handful of tricks that can already change quite your impact. Absolutely right.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really about going back to find your confidence and remembering the value that you can bring to a company rather than just ticking the boxes of job description. I think that's most important.
And then also maybe, and then the last one is, of course, make sure with whom, who's your interview partner. If your interview partner and decision maker is maybe a woman, she can better understand how you start with it. But if you have in front of you a man, that his expectation is that you have a lot of things on your credit list, so don't start with what you don't have, because for him it would be like, okay, this is not good.
But that's not exactly. But that's why we need. I'm also a big fan of cross mentoring, so men mentoring women and women mentoring men, because in that way women can learn from men that starting like this is. Like for us is more normal, but clearly for someone else it might be completely out of place. But on the other hand, men can learn that women might have this approach. And so when they're in front of it, they're like, okay, now I know when this person is doing this, like, stop, I don't want to hear that. We'll talk about it later. Now tell me about what you can bring to the job. So it goes back to what you said before. We don't want men and women to be the same. You know, it's good to be different, just to learn to work together and so that everybody gets the same chances. One thing I want to talk to you is, because you talked before at the very beginning, you know, you're into blockchain, you know, technology obviously is a big part of what you do. And I would like to ask you, why do you think it's so important that women are more represented in the technological space? I mean,
why I really think it's crucial, but also societal crucial, is that more and more of what is going to happen in the decision process is going to be driven by artificial intelligence. Now, if you think what artificial intelligence is large data pools on the one side, but then algorithms that are running over these large data pools. Now, as we have said, I mean, a man cannot out of his mind and a woman cannot out of his mind. So if the person that designs the algorithm does it honestly, but with a man approach, well, these machines, they're going to be male.
Absolutely.
So at the end of the day, we have reproduced again something that we try right now to fix. Because we had nevertheless a very patriarchal society with thinking and education, as you said it. And now we educate the machines the same thing. So we cannot expect another outcome if we redo the same kind of process. So that's why my personal belief is, as we are now at the edge of this switch, and this is going to be massive even in the future, we have just seen the tip of the iceberg. The big changes are still to come in that field. So it is very, very important that decision makers make sure that they don't make this error, because it's also a matter of decision makers. But also, it is important that women are conscious that they have to have their voice in that. Because if they don't have the voice, well, then we are going not to be have a result which is balanced. And here again, and we can speak about that later, I believe that even the decision maker, whether he's a man or a woman, he should take care himself of it, because it is in his own interest. Because at the end of the day, with his artificial intelligence kind of thing, he might also want to address a female market. But if he just started with a kind of very man-orientated decision-making process, well, the decision is going to be very male orientated. And that's why I'm a strong believer that women have to take conscience of this, decision makers anyhow, and that we have to try to make sure that these machines also get a more kind of female thinking process in what they are doing. And here again, I mean, what is good is that does not necessarily mean women have to be 50% decoders, because coder, they just code what they get when transposing an algorithm. I mean, so there's a process, the design process, the analyst process that is before. And there's plenty of roles there also for women, very interesting roles for women in this process that should absolutely be taken. Now, that having said, that I would be more than happy if also the coders would be more balanced, because in Invest3 we wanted to have a balance in the tech team, and is a disaster. It's a complete disaster. You do not manage really to find a lot of back-end front-end developers. You can find them, but you really have to be active in looking for, and the pool of which you can choose is, of course, by far smaller. And that is also a starting point. The pools have to be more equal at the beginning, then the outcome is also more equal at the end. But here again, I mean, I remember at our diversity summit, this young student that was speaking about her experience of being 100% techie and being the two girls in a 50 class. And it was really not so easy. She really struggled against this kind of stereotypes, and also the way you are then treated, and so on and so on. So we have to become more conscious when these things are addressed. So also to give also, for example, then girls or young women, if they join these kind of careers, that they don't feel like this kind of, what are you doing here? I mean, that should not be the way forward.
Yeah, actually, there's so much that we have to cover, but starting from this one, this is something that really surprised me. Also, when we had the conference on the 8th of March, there was Julie, she studied at the Luxembourg Tech School, and she was saying people were like, what are you doing? Like, are you coding now? And I can't believe that we are so still having these stereotypes in our mind that women cannot, girls cannot be in tech. Like, it's I don't know why that happens, because if you look at actually, you know, academically, they tend to do much better in math and in science and all of that. But then when they decide what to do for a living, they go into marketing like me or HR. It's like, what happened there? Where was it, you know, why this choice? But I understand it, because if you are the only one and everybody puts pressure on you, then you might want just, why get all the way there to just be then put in the corner? There is, you know, I think it's very important, a bit like, you know, when we talk about role modeling, it's not just important to see the super accomplished role model female there, but also people that relate to you on, you know, if there were more women and the middle management, then the, you know, the entry level will be more encouraged to follow. So we, at some point, we need to start from somewhere, because otherwise we keep on staying in this situation, which is really surprising, especially as technology is evolving so much. And, you know, we've seen products that would never have been invented before, because one technology was only a male thing. Like, certain parts of the technology world has never been developed because nobody had interest in that. Now the women are starting to come in. They bring different ideas. It's the benefits for society are large. I love what you said before. Is like, you know, it's a benefit for the owner, the business owner, to, you know, to have like gender equality is a fact that is you know, makes business sense. And yet we are still here talking about the same problem. It's like, what? How are we going to change this? Yeah. And it is very dangerous. What you said before, like, I mean, AI is going to be massive. It's already big, but it's going to be massive. And we are going to do even worse in this way. There was a case, it wasn't Amazon a few years ago, that they had a massive problem with their, I can't remember if it was Amazon or Google, one of the big companies. I'll research that. But they had an AI system to for the hiring process, only to discover it was completely racist and gender biased.
And then there are cases already. For example, also in the US, there were the first court cases on where they found out that some of these AI decision process that prepared the decision or even made it were biased, yeah, absolutely. Racist bias or similar. So it's a real topic. It's not like all maybe. This is very important that in the design this is in, and then also to for example, like I'm very happy now that my daughter I had just a chat with her last weekend. And my daughter had now realized that she had, so she's in communication science. So again, that would be like a little bit just, stereotype of marketing communication. but she's a passionate, so that's why I think. But she has realized this thing. She seems to realize more and more these things about digital marketing and so on and so on. And she's now very excited to do a course that, about coding, as well as digital, everything which is digital marketing and AI. And so why she's never going to be a full coder, but she can now help to make sure that what the guys are coding is what is a more balanced way of thinking. And that's why I would also say to everybody, don't think that if you are not a coder, that you are not in the process. You are in the process, you have to play your role. And you should play your role, not to let us repeat this thing massively before we correct it again the next generation. And so there is a possibility to, in the process, participate. You don't have to be like the hardcore algorithmic guy or whatsoever. And that would be also my encouragement, to say, like, don't think that if you cannot do algorithms and or you cannot code, that is, oh shit, now I have to wait, sorry for the word. I have to wait then for another one to do it. You should try to understand and make yourself knowledgeable, and then that you are fit for purpose to cooperate with somebody else, but that you know, okay, what he's doing, how he's doing, how he's doing it, and that you could influence what he's doing.
Absolutely. That was also what Sarah was saying the other day, because she works in technology. Sarah, who again was with us at the event on the 8th of March, and again she was one of the guests of this podcast, as this podcast follow-up exactly from that event, is that she works in technology, but she's not a coder herself. She actually comes from an artistic background. She was working at a Philharmonie here in Luxembourg, and yet she has so much to bring, because again, it's also diversity. You bring diverse thinking. So definitely there's space for women in technology, that they come from a technological background or not. And that is something that women need to realize, men should realize. And again, the more we start seeing that, the more normalized is it. It's, the problem is that we are just not used to it. So it really, like, when you see someone in tech, like, oh, that's cool. I will say that's cool. Someone else will say like, oh, you know, that's, I've never seen someone. But there's still that surprise element that shouldn't be there anymore. Because when we get to the inclusion for real, then things are going to change. And then there is another areas where we cover the during our event, and that is very important, where women are severely underrepresented. I mean, there are certain markets where women are severely underrepresented, and one is definitely technology, the other one is finance. And you and I were chatting a little bit about the problem of investment, and women and investments seems to be two things, two words that don't belong to each other. They're completely separated, which is a problem for women, but for society, again, for society at large. So what is your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a problem for women, because they should absolutely take their own financial independence in their hands. And it is important to take your own financial independence in your hands to make sure that as you go by age, that for example, there are topics like pension, but also there are topic in certain moment in your decision, you might want to in certain decisions in your life, you might want to make an investment in a decision like stopping your career for a year. So that means you need financial means to do that. And that's what is really freedom. Financial freedom is to do at a certain moment in your life things. Now, the problem is if you just there's two ways there's three ways of handling this problem. Number one is you don't do anything, and if you looked at whatever happening the last 12 years, inflation was eating up your money at the end of the day because you couldn't get interest. But on the other hand, money was losing value every day. Not good. Second is I let my husband, my friend, or whatever deal with it, which I also don't think it's a good idea, because you should take care of yourself. Your investment decision. And then the last and the good one is I start to take care of it by myself, and that number one gives me more freedom also, because we get married maybe with the idea to stay forever married, but we also can get divorced, and it's all complicated, and at that moment I should feel adult enough to deal with my things. But also what is more important is at the end of the day, also an investment decision is a decision on how society is going to look tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And do we want just men making decisions on how we want to have society tomorrow? And a part of the financial independence, you should also have more and more your way in as a female decision maker on how I want my money to be invested. And I think that is more and more true when we speak about all these kind of sustainable kind of topics. There definitely, I would be very pleased if there would be also more female thinking going into these decisions. Now, that having said, I also believe that number one, women are as good as investing than men. But they are very, very different in what they kind of do. And so why are they not in the field of investment? For the simple reason that the way this investment activity is addressed, and I now speak about the more retail kind of thing, is again very male. And so they feel then two things. Number one, I'm not interested in this. And number two is, I cannot find my way. Because why? Because it's a very male way. And for example, while a man would be more interested maybe in investing or in this kind of more trading adrenaline kind of bit of it, let's try to make short-term money. Our studies show that women are by far more long-term sustainable oriented. So they are definitely more in the values-driven space than generally men, which is very, very interesting also for society. That's why also they should be part of the investment process. And so I think also there to change the whole thing, I think what it needs is a different address and a different thought process in approaching it. And so when we had started at Invest3, with our money flow app, we have said we want to make sure that our users are 50-50. Huh? We do not want to create. I also find we could have said we create the thing for women. No, we said let's really try to make it a 50-50 thing. It should be possible to find a balance that addresses both sides. I know it's a little bit of a challenge because to go one way or the other way might be easier, but we took the challenge, so let's make it an address for both sides. And I remember at that time we were speaking about, so number one, we had already a good objective to start with. And then we were trying to make our plan to achieve this. And so we had some designs that we were thinking on, how do we do this? How do we do that? And I said, I like that very much. This is really cool and I can really work well with this, or we should maybe all go that way. And then a person that is a lady, Sarah, she's in charge of product development and some other stuff. And she said, well, it's not bad, George, it's cool, but this is very male. And I was like, do you think? Yes, it is. Look, fine. I mean, I did not definitely want to like something which was very male, but it spoke to me because I'm a man, of course. But it didn't speak as much to her. And she was even able to recognize and say, well, I can understand that a man likes this, but a woman is not going to like this. So, and that is very interesting, because of course, then we said, okay, what should we then do? And we adjusted the whole thing. But that brings me pretty much back in two kind of fields that we have already started early on, which is to say, like, how important to have diversity in teams? Mm-hmm. Because forget about it, to try to develop an app for both genders where just men are sitting around the table.
But that's exactly right. How can you do?
No chance. I mean, and so that's why it is important to have female decision makers, female input in the whole process, because only then you can expect that hopefully you get a product which really fits both sides. And that is one thing. And the other thing is like, frankly, if that was your objective as a business, I mean, you would be geared up for failure if you have not a diverse staff. And that is really what is interesting again here is to say, number one, I would have said for me, it is important to say that at the end of the day, you can influence society also by investing. You can influence it by voting, but this takes every 4 or 5 years. You can influence society by consumption, but consumption suggests that there are product alternatives which are affordable. And creating products, alternatives that are affordable requires investments to be made in companies that create these ones. And that needs investors that say, well, I'm going to just put my money in this company because I like what they are producing and what they are doing. And these are my criteria. And those criteria should be the kind of environmental, social, but also gender topics and inclusivity topics, diversity topics. These should be part of criteria when you choose investment. And I honestly believe it's also going to make a difference between the real successful companies and the others. And there's also statistics around that show that diverse team in long term produce better company results than just uniquely focused
Absolutely. Teams.
Very often, further or later, they go even down and go bankrupt because they could not simply see certain things coming because there was nobody there telling them this is male, this is female, this is old, this is new, this is old technology, because you always like the technology that you have in front of you that was your current success, but you might not see what is needed for your future success.
Actually, that's very true. That there is a study that all the companies, the Fortune 500 that have dropped out of Fortune 500, they were actually very heavily one gender company. So I think, and it's not just because women are better or anything, it's really just diverse thinking. It's just bringing something different to the table. It's not a question of, you know, being better or less, more suited. It's just that if you always around the same people, there is never, you know, nothing new is going to happen. And so that's why diversity is not just about gender either, is that diversity is a much larger topic. But I love what you said, that actually the other day when we were chatting for another event, you said you vote with your money. And I love that concept.
Absolutely.
Because the investment, if we really get all together and decide that the ESG is not just a good to have, which at the moment is still a bit, you know, the environmental and societal and governance investment. At the moment is still all very nice to have. It's a bit difficult to actually track which companies do really invest in ESG and which ones are doing more for ticking boxes. But if we are actually put pressure for this to become mainstream and to be real, can you imagine the impact we can have? And you know, and women are naturally, as you said before, tend to invest in long-term sustainability. Women tend also to look at sustainability as a, like, even if it might be more expensive or might be bringing less returns on the long, in the short term, we tend to have this, maybe because, I don't know, we are mothers, I don't know, we look at the next generation. Maybe I'm generalizing here, but we will see a lot of studies shows that women tend to think about sustainability more. And so it's a benefit for the entire, again, it's a benefit for entire society. But as you say, if the tools and the products that allows us to invest, already we are not naturally going to invest, but then if the tools are not suited for us, then you really have one barrier after the other. After the other. At some point, one is, I have enough in my life, I don't need to do that.
Absolutely. I have enough problems and no fun, so that's good. So the ambition, of course, should be that, and our ambition is that you will have pleasure by buying financial services, which is generally not the case, because generally financial services is a kind of, it worked, oh, hallelujah. There was no problem, they didn't make me a big thing out of it. And we feel this is completely wrong. And definitely we absolutely are convinced that we can make it an important contribution to society and a pleasurable and as frictionless as possible, because that's the name of the game. And that's why also what at the end of the day is more important than the product. The product has to be good, but the product alone does not bring its goal if there is no adequate experience that goes with it. Because at the end of the day, the tolerance of the clients of today for frictions is very, very low. So it has really to go tuck, 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 tuck. And it doesn't, if it works like that, fine, it's cool. And I really like it, I'm passionate about it. And of course you should also try to engage on an emotional level with your users, because as we said, if you want them to have really fun, you better engage on an emotional basis, because if not, they would say like, it's okay, it's financial service like all the others. So I think that is something that should be our goal. But the other goal should then also be really make this, I vote with my money. And I vote with my money would make that you bring the right elements on such a platform that allows you to properly decide in all transparency for yourself what your money wants, what you want your money to do. So, and then, and because what we also felt and found out in studies, in market studies that we made, number one, women can be as much interested as men in investing, absolutely. Again, criteria are completely different that they approach. But the other thing is like, and as we speak about sustainable topic, generally, everybody feels that sustainability is very individual. I mean, some are maximalistic, some are less, try to make some compromises, or they have a different view. I mean, for example, I give you one example. I mean, some feel very strong about, so a lot of people feel very strong about climate change. And now when it comes to climate change, some are really disappointed that the European Union, for example, says in the criteria for positive impact investment, we include nuclear. And of course, if you look from a CO2 perspective, it might make sense. Okay, it doesn't produce CO2, but creates other problems. And for example, there also you see then how big the world is. For a French, it's perfectly okay. For a German, like, this is the disaster. Now, now you come, of course, to this point, like, for an impact fund that has nuclear, for a German would be greenwashing. For a French would be perfectly okay. So that's why an application that you do on this field, if you really want to, and that we get that feedback, is that people want to choose what is good for them. So for example, an app, and we have this kind of features whereby you would say like, I want to invest in climate change, but look, nuclear is a no-go for me. That means you get just the climate change stuff, regardless what the European Union has decided, you just got the stuff without nuclear. Fine. And that is also something which is very interesting. And also believes, I believe this speaks, by the way, also more to women than to men, because I have also the feeling that from time to time, the women, they are more detail focused. They look more into detail, kind of minor things, where men get more the broader view, and they want to keep this broader thing. I'm not really interested to have a deeper dive. And I think these elements are important elements. And so, as you say, I think there is this appetite for transparency to decide for yourself what is really good and bad. And I can fully understand that. I can, most probably history is going to tell us the truth, whether nuclear is a good idea or not in the long run. Now, every society makes his own choice, as well as every individual is going to make his own choice. And believe it or not, if nobody wants to invest in a fund where there's nuclear in there, well, it will not happen. There will be more windmills than nuclear. That's what it is. And maybe to tell you a story on that one, which I was personally impressed, is that a big asset manager at a certain moment made a big statement and went to a public statement. He said, well, if the oil companies are not making a serious transition, we are going to kick them out of our portfolios.
Wow.
So that was on a Friday, something like that, Thursday, Friday, 1 week. And by coincidence, on Wednesday, midweek, the week after, a CEO of a big oil company had an entire page of interview in the Financial Times. Oh, well, that must be a coincidence, no? And they were having a full discussion. And they came also to this ESG discussion. And he said, well, look, it's not so easy. We still have all that stuff that we want to amortize. Yeah. And now we have made investments. And then journalists got him on the second foot, like, say, okay, but you are a manager. Could you not have foreseen this? I mean, you're still, why do you still invest in something which is not the future? And then he said something which is very, very interesting and exactly liaises to our debate. He said, well, look, of course we were foreseeing this and we saw this happening, but we had foreseen the speed and the massiveness. What does that tell me? That they listen to investors, because investors, if they tell them in a higher speed, we won't love you anymore, they start to get scared.
Exactly. But that goes back to what you just said before. We vote with our money.
Absolutely.
Greenpeace fails when she puts their boat in front of the big oil tank, an investor can do, like, you know, like it's a completely different power. Yeah. It's like, if you think about that, and again, it goes back to what you were saying before, like, you know, say if it's true that we need to have more, you know, more women, like the technology needs to be do more to include women. And by the way, your daughter, when she's going to do digital marketing and all of that, she will figure out all the things that you just spoke about that are also true in marketing. So the user experience, is the same. We want things quickly. We want to be engaged. We want to be, you know, so there are very similarities, a lot of similarities in digital space for marketing and digital space for technology. But yeah, so definitely. So we did our entire circle. We started with technology, went through investment, we back to technology. And at the end of the day, it's really a job that we have to take as a society to think, to change things for our own good. Pretty much. I think that's what something we agree. And women need to take the lead themselves, but also developers and companies need to see it. Otherwise, they're going to be the ones that the investors are going to be like, well, I'm not going to invest in you anymore. Thank you very much. You are out.
No, it's absolutely. And that's why, and if you ask me that, why am I touching as a man the topic? Because I believe it's simply important for society and for the whole thing, because it's not about... And it's also about fair treatment and everything, but the outcome is important for all of us. And so we all have to fix it together. This is not just, okay, it's up to the women to fix the women thing and men continue to do whatever they want. No, I mean, it's up for a better place for women and men, take it in their hands and try to fix this problem.
Thank you so much. That was the best. Like, you were speaking now, this, I'm going to need to extract this one, the last sentence, and make it as, you know, the little catchy thing at the beginning. No, it's beautiful. Thank you so much, George, for your time. Thank you for being such a passionate supporter of gender inclusion and also sustainability in general. Like, it was incredible to find out all the things you do outside from industry. And really a great pleasure to talk with you.
Okay. Thank you, Julia.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please support us by liking it, by subscribing to our channel, and by sharing with your friends. It might seem such a small thing, but actually it will help us a lot. Thank you so much.
And...